Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded November 13th.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Scott Harms of Archer Financial Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Jason Clapp of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. While you're there, please do order your tickets for our Farm Assets Conference coming up on the Monday before Thanksgiving. Just a week and a day or so away now. That's the 24th day of November. Again, order your tickets online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Or call this number, 800-898-1065. Let's begin the program as usual with our list of items to discuss. Jason Clapp?
Mainly what to do about the soybean market here. We've had a few volatile days, and really just trying to keep everything calm and keep a steady approach to a market that's been really volatile, and trying to keep from becoming really emotionally engaged with it, and trying to keep from getting chopped up on a day when you can have an up 20 day followed by a down 40 day or whatever it may be.
Jason Clapp, of course, is with Risk Management Commodities. He's out of Lafayette, Indiana. Kurt Kimmel is here from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. On your list, Kurt?
Well, main question probably is a marketing strategy versus a trading strategy. We did a lot of hedging early in the marketing year, and had quite a few profits in hedge positions. All of a sudden, we're seeing these hedge positions give up a little bit back to the upside. So the main question, am I a grain marketer or am I a trader? There's two different atmospheres at this point in time, probably.
Scott Harms of Archer Financial Services.
Yeah, we're looking out through the next 45 days to year end. I think especially looking at this corn market, I think there's going to be some real good opportunities. And I think our focus with our customers is to not walk away from the markets, even though it's getting close to holiday time. I think there's going to be some real opportunities and some plans, opportunities to put some plans in place.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, they leave anything for you?
I think it's how much money do the funds have left to push this market when the fundamentals aren't really there to do it, and what degree do we want to look at Putin or Russia's attitude as to what they're doing in Ukraine now, and will it disrupt exports or not?
Why don't you take those issues up for me, Wayne, very quickly. I'll start with the Ukraine-Russian attitude.
Well, this happened during the summer, but that wasn't technically as strong. We sort of seemed to go by, and we were very, very, not taken aback because exports did not seem to stop or slow down in the middle of a civil war. Very unusual for that. But I think that there's a little more edginess about it this time as to what we're looking at. I think it's adding a little, volatility to the thing that way. And the other question, that we really have is the funds have really come in and bought the Dickens. We saw record volume or the, one of the highest volume days for the last 10 years in the corn market. And, a lot of fund activity. And we heard money had went out of the funds, and how much is left there, and how high can they take these things?
Yeah, so I'm going to stay with you on this one for a second, Wayne. So why is it that you suppose the funds are back in the marketplace? Because they had gotten out in September, and we were talking about that quite often on the air.
Yeah, and I'm not 100% sure. I think that they like to play the weather game going into a growing season. And, of course, we're going into the growing season in South America, just trying to get planting finished up on the beans down there. They think that, historically over the last few years, we were at a very cheap level as compared to what we've seen over the last 3 years. And they consider themselves to be buying some value. And, of course, with the way the dollar has reacted and the way the crude oil is acting, they're maybe getting out of the energies and the currencies and going to the ag commodities.
Kurt Kimmel, this brings me to you because you mentioned trading strategies versus marketing strategies. The funds, of course, I believe, would be looking at trading strategies. Does it make sense for them to be buyers at this time? Obviously, they must believe this would be the case.
Well, yeah, the funds are technically driven, and basically the green line's above the red line, so they should have the green light to be buyers and trade from a bullish point of view. Also, too, when you look at a long-term seasonal chart, and it's well pointed out that you know, we have a fall low, and then we move higher into the early winter time frame. So for those investors wanting to capture trend, this grain trend is one of the most dominant seasonal trends to follow, especially when we approach the oversold conditions in through here. So as a trader, as a speculator, right now the market seems to want to move higher in through here. And as a producer, you can use that to your advantage to make some sales here as we move higher down the road here, Todd.
Scott Harms, you have the unique opportunity to hear from farmers when you're in your office at Oakland, Illinois, but also to hear from larger players in the marketplace when you're at the Archer Financial Services offices in Chicago. What's the difference between the two and the way they feel about the marketplace at this time?
Well, I think a lot of the selling dried up as we, you know, we were trying to sort out the loan rate in the month of October, and prices dipped below that, you know, those levels. And, you know, I think that selling dried up and allowed the market to bounce. From a commercial side of it, you know, a lot of those programs are more automated, and they've been able to take advantage of this weakness. They've been buyers, really, all along, more of an automated program. We've seen the head selling largely dry up. You know, every analyst seemed like in the business was preaching to farmers over the last several months as harvest moved along, as we got closer to harvest, that they needed to be selling and selling more and selling out into further months. And now we've got a counter-seasonal rally that has, you know, left, you know, those that did participate and make some sales at lower levels, now they're a little gun-shy, deer in the headlights as far as taking advantage of these higher prices. We do think it's a great opportunity for producers to step back into the market if they've got some sales off at lower levels that they want to look to unwind. Go ahead and extend your coverage a little bit using some kind of price floor and options, and then perhaps a break into the end of November as we liquidate the December open interest as an opportunity to unwind some of those sales that perhaps you made it, you were coaxed into making at lower levels based on different analysts' opinion. You can unwind those on November, late November, early December weakness.
Wait, did I hear you tell me that hedge pressure had alleviated, which I believe, but that throughout the process, the commercials were buyers of the marketplace at the same point?
Yeah, I think that they're, well, once commercials, I mean, commercials are operate just as a farmer would as far as covering their costs of production and costs of business. And so they've got more automated programs. Once they get below a certain price, they buy a certain amount a week. And it's not aggressive buying. But we've seen some players, you know, some of the customers that we have that we work on the commercial side of it that perhaps haven't done any business for quite some time have been active, a little more active, certainly in the last month or two.
Well, you tell me, and I'm going to delve this just a little bit deeper with you, that they were doing this technically driven, but generally a commercial would be fundamentally driven. There must be something besides just the red line and the green line converging.
Well, like, again, the pickup of buying the last couple months has been fundamentally driven. I mean, it's, you know, covering their cost of production. We work with some, you know, poultry operations, and they've been, you know, more comfortable going hand to mouth. As you know, as they needed product, but now they're willing to step out and extend coverage into the spring and the summer, you know, because it makes sense for their particular operation.
Jason Clapp, he mentioned the poultry producers. That takes me to the southeast for poultry and pork production both. They have been caught short, at least that's the rumor, and it appears that's been the case because of some transportation issues, not being able to move meal into the right places. Can you explain what happened over the past couple of weeks?
Yeah, what you've seen, you know, end users trying to get product that can't get product end up buying the board or buying a meal on the board. The same goes true, from what I've heard and understood, that the processors at the same time ended up double booked as well, since soybean harvest was delayed as it was here going through October with the foul weather that we had. So you just had a whole lot of buying that really just picked all markets up off and drug them higher by the bootstraps. And so what we're seeing here is, we've made our own domestic meal price, priced out of the world market. You see in here talk about soy meal boats coming to us from South America now over the winter. And so kind of watching how this thing plays out over the next few weeks is going to be pretty interesting.
You suggested we should talk about soybean sales. Are you in favor of making those at these levels?
Very much so. I always follow the rule, if something seems too good to be true, it probably is. So when you've had a whole year to talk about how good the soybean crop is, and then you give me a dollar and a half or whatever we're at now, rally right in the middle of harvest, I would jump in there and make some cash sales, because we've got a lot of people still talking about the potential for $9 being on the table, and you gotta agree with somewhat of what they're saying. We've got a South America crop that's going to come to us here in a couple more months, and you've got a 2015 soybean crop in the U.S. that could be showing more planted acres than a corn crop. So that's a lot of soy to hit the world, and I know that soybeans continue to surprise us with the amount of demand from the world. But I think you got to take advantage of this, this little gift that we've received here.
Anybody with an opposing view on soybean sales?
Well, just one observation, too, on this meal double booking. It kind of suggests, we were virtually out of beans. Pipeline was dry and everybody was out. And if the processor's able to produce enough meal this short of time for everybody to be double booked, well, if they keep producing, there's going to be plenty of meal just around the corner here. I think it's just a matter of time before the light bulb goes off.
Yeah, I'd like to add to the meal situation. The way we look at it is, it really was largely unforeseen. We get a lot of questions. What did we miss? Beans have rallied nearly $1.70 or over $1.70. Corn's rallied 70 cents. And we had a lot of questions. What were we missing? And it was a little bit of just the timing of the way things set up at the. With the September stocks number coming in below at 92 million bushel, when the expectations were 130 million bushel, and then you layer it on harvest delays, and the Nova crush in October was 10 million below last year and the lowest since 1996. So it was really a combination of all those factors, kind of at the wrong time. They thought they had the pipeline full, and they found out they didn't.
The one thing I want to know is, why did we see so much buying of the board and the meal instead of just basis for relocation of the meal that we had? In the past, we would have, spot bids or premiums, just like we were paying for beans the first couple weeks of September when the processors needed beans, but it wasn't an all-fall bid. And why, that it still amazes me that just buying the board doesn't get meal to my chickens in North Carolina.
Yeah, so are we still missing something in this picture is the question then, right?
Yeah, I wonder if anybody had a reason for why the board was being bought rather than the basis level, just taking care of this as it generally does in the cash grain business.
Anybody have an answer?
I could go back to Kurt's comment about the double booking. Perhaps that, it was just really trying to scramble to lock in those margins as best they could.
Okay, let me put a different twist into this and see what you think about this one. Does the delayed late planting season in South America, which should extend the export season for the United States, have anything to play in this marketplace?
Which should give us another 2 weeks to 3 weeks of possibly being able to be in control of the export market before they get very aggressive against us. We've been talking all along, and I think one of the reasons that we've seen the bean market come back the way it has is we're trying to shove a year's worth of exports, basically 70% of it, in a six-month time period. And we know that the farmer's been very, very tight holders, very stubborn, and I think that the commercial has sat back and not hedged some of this bean purchases over the last little bit and let the funds go ahead and push this up so it would get to levels that they think the farmers will open their bin doors.
Yeah, am I wrong in thinking that China has continued to buy from the United States longer into the season, the last 2, possibly 3 years than many had thought, meaning that it was a year-round purchase or nearly a year-round purchasing rather than a front-loaded 6 months? And why would that change this year?
Well, I think we've already got a lot on the books for the first 6 months of ours that way. That makes it a very aggressive export because we knew that we were looking at a big crop and we were willing sellers for that time period, or the commercials were. And we know that we have to put a lot together during the first 6 months to get it to the Gulf, to get it to the Pacific Northwest, wherever we're going to ship it out of. And I think that's one of the reasons that the board was able to rally is because farmers were a little more stubborn holders than they'd hoped they'd been.
Okay, so if you all agree that you think farmers should make soybean sales at this point, is there any good reason to be a contrarian and simply not do it?
Because everybody else is.
Well, I mean, that's sort of the...
That's it by definition.
By definition, because everybody else is, you probably should not.
Well, you can come in and do some timely sales, and when you do those sales, you can do some cash replacement. There's quite a few strategies out there to go ahead and let the product go and do some replacement with a limited amount of risk, but you got to do it all the same day. I think some of the frustration in marketing was guys sold a lot of cash grain this fall but didn't replace it right away, and so they found themselves chasing the market. But no, you can take advantage of these prices and do a little replacement in case we do turn hot and dry later on in January, February in the Southern Hemisphere.
I think the other argument, Wayne mentioned it earlier, when do the funds stop buying corn? And that's a very good question that I don't believe any of us know the answer to. They'll stop when they stop. They've long probably close to 150,000 contracts. They were long 200,000 contracts earlier this year, so they certainly still have some more buying power. I mentioned earlier I thought that my opinion that, that as we go through and liquidate some of this December open interest as we get closer to the end of the month and delivery period, that it's going to be the longs that are going to be forced out of the market because the funds have such a big long position and they're, it's going to lead to weakness. And that's my opinion, but the opposite could be true. I mean, it could be a situation where the shorts get forced out of the market as we get closer and closer to delivery, and it may add a little more pain to those trying to hold on to short positions, and that may extend this rally.
Jason, the FSA numbers were released again this week. They showed a shorter number of acres again, though it's not really clear what that might mean. Did the marketplace simply discount that as a player, or did they react to it in Chicago?
I don't know if what we've been doing here lately would constitute a reaction to those types of numbers. Mainly in my eyes because, still up until this year, and now with the new farm bill, it's going to be a little different, but not everyone had to participate in these types of numbers either. You've seen some slight changes here in what's going on. Until, in my eyes, you see it on like a WASDE report, then I might pay attention to what's being said. But, in my opinion, I don't think there's really anything to be read here from the slight changes they made on these revised numbers for beans and corn.
Anybody think those acres will go away in January when we get the final crop production figures and acreage numbers may be changed and they'll have to settle things and put them all in order?
NASA made a comment that they were very comfortable with the numbers that they had earlier and that they didn't necessarily just follow FSA numbers because of the number of acres that weren't in the program as such. We also, if you remember, the numbers didn't have to be finalized till in December in some cases, so we could still be adding some numbers to those before the January report, number two. So, the other thing is to look at here is WASDE generally, when they haven't, NASA hasn't always followed these that closely. They've used them as a guideline. I think that they're being talked about extremely today. I know that Dan talked about them quite a bit on his afternoon or his noon tape. That I think it's a way of some way justifying the technical rally that's going on. We look for reasons of why it's happening rather than just a technical chart move. And this is one thing that they can grasp at, but I don't think it's the cause.
I'd just like to add, I thought all summer long that the acres were overstated, but I anticipated that there would be a larger adjustment by now, and I was surprised that there wasn't an adjustment here in November, and I guess now I'm coming around to the idea. I know, you know, there are those that are looking for potentially 2 million acre reduction in January or December or January, I guess would be January in the report, maybe 1 million acres in beans. I guess I'm coming around to the idea that they're not going to change them much.
All right, so if that's not changing much, and I think, Wayne, you and Scott are on relatively the same line there, what is it fundamentally that's happening in the corn market to cause the market to move higher?
I think it started with meal. I don't believe it's fundamental largely. I mean, perhaps the market got a little overdone to the downside.
It's a sympathy move?
I think it got overdone to the downside, perhaps so the first part of the buying was because it was overdone, and then the soybean meal situation took off, and then all of a sudden you bring corn values back to 350, and then we start crossing over moving average, and then it becomes a technical rally, and that's difficult. You know, so the last bit of it has been more technical in nature, and it's hard to find a real strong fundamental argument. Exports at this point are overstated, and those have to come down, I would think, going forward.
Oh, so the idea then is that the $2 billion or $2.1 billion, depending on which month you were looking at, carryout for corn actually was far more comfortable than what the trade had dialed in on the lead option futures markets.
I think there's still plenty of corn in the U.S. and in the world if you look at the supply-demand figures, and basically if you look at the USDA balance sheet, you know, we're higher on corn and beans than what they're projecting right now. I think Scott's telling you this was a fund-inspired technical move, and they're going also looking for value because, like we said, they move money out of financials, they're moving money out of energies, and they are looking at what they consider the something that's underpriced, and they looked at corn compared to beans and said corn's underpriced too.
And if we go back and just look at the carryover estimates, or at least the trade talk surrounding the carryout estimate of, you know, December of 2013, there was a lot of talk of 2.3 billion bushel carryover for that January report. It never revealed itself, and we all know what happened from there. But prices last December couldn't even break $4, and here we are. We found ourselves talking about a very similar carryover. Now, we had a real crop out there, and we had a real piles of corn out there. I understand that, but we have a very similar carryover estimate than what the chatter was in December of last year, and we were basically a dollar lower. So I guess my argument might be perhaps we just overdid it to the downside.
Right. Which is to say that the supply we have on hand, or expected supply on hand, is comfortable and not burdensome.
Yeah, I think we could chew through. I mean, if you want to argue for lower acres, and you know, you could pull carryover down a couple hundred million bushel. If you know, demand base increases, perhaps exports, you know, happen to stay where they are. And ethanol, we saw that expand earlier this week. Ethanol production expand this week. Perhaps you could draw down those cumbersome stocks from there, and all of a sudden you're not necessarily unfairly priced at $3.50 to, you know, $4 corn.
I know it's semantics here, but perception is a lot of what the trade is all about, Jason Clapp. And I'm trying to get at the 2 billion bushel carryout. Is that a burdensome supply of corn, which has one connotation, or is it a comfortable supply of corn?
My eyes, it's comfortable, because I think what we've seen in the past couple of years is it's pretty easy to make that number smaller in my mind. And I guess that's where my mind's going for this year, too. I think as we close it out and go into the spring and summer, I don't think we finish with a 2 billion bushel carryout. I think we're south of there. Just because, in my mind, you don't use less product this year compared to last year at lower prices than last year. And I know that we've got grain stocks all over the world, but when I look at $3 corn, $3.50 corn like we have had all fall versus $5.50 and $6 corn like we've had the last couple of years, I find something to do with the cheap corn. I find a place to put it. I find somewhere to use it. So I would go with comfortable for now.
Anybody else?
I would agree with it. Comfortable is the right terminology, but it's also doesn't, you know, it doesn't expand our demand to take prices a lot higher either, which doesn't argue for this rally extending. It's nice to chew through 2 billion bushel corn, but it's easier to do that with prices at 350, or, you know, closer to 350, especially given prices in the world.
Let's get a final word from each of you. We'll start, Wayne Nelson, with you at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana.
I think that we have witnessed quite a rebound in prices from the levels we thought they would be. I think it's time to be trying to put some floors under some of the stuff. I know that technically we're getting to points where a lot of the advisory firms are backing away from some of their new crop hedges, but I think we want to try to have some puts below the market here.
Jason Clapp of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Yeah, I heard someone mention it earlier about before we all zip off and finish up harvest and head to Florida, I think it's really going to pay off to do a little homework before you leave and make sure some grain buyers or brokers know what you need to be doing with your pricing, because the rallies are swift and fast and can happen before you can even pick up the phone.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois.
We've been up virtually 6 weeks off the low end through here, and the concern from a producer's point of view, the guys or the operations that's been buying the market can easily turn sellers at some point in time, and with the cycle lows due for a correction here, as we look forward through here, I think you need to keep that in mind, because the volatility is starting to increase in here. The market movement's getting awful fast, and sometimes that's a sign of something to come.
And Scott Harms of Archer Financial Services.
Yeah, this has been, I think, quite an opportunity for producers to look to extend your coverage, look at that price floor using an option strategy. If you've made some sales, been pushed into some sales by some analysts over the last 60 days, perhaps extending some coverage here, extending your comfort level a little bit, and unwinding some of those sales as the market starts to move into December first notice day, might be a good opportunity, something to look at.
Thank you to the panelists for joining us here on this November the 13th edition of Commodity Week, a production of Illinois Public Media. Please do find us online at willag.org. You can follow me on Twitter if you'd like. My handle is @CommodityWeek. You have a good week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.